Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only, Dan Z, and I are recording this on Wednesday, December 11th. We've basically caught Dan between trips to the airports, folks. You know, in fact, I'm not even sure you've unpacked at this point, Dan, because you flew back in from Orlando, what, Sunday, Monday?
When? I got home from Orlando on Sunday, and I leave for California on Saturday, so coast to coast in 6 weeks. The only other person that moves around that much is Drew Taylor, and that's because he's running from the law.
Well, yeah, you know, again, constantly sawing off ankle bracelets. It's a very depressing situation.
Indeed.
Anyway, all right, well, look, you know, like Dan said, this coming weekend, Dan's headed to Hollywood, and we can talk about what he does when he goes there on our future show. But, you know, for now, what we're going to do in the second half of today's show, Dan's going to share his thoughts about Rise of the Resistance, which you managed to get down to Orlando for the opening weekend.
Yes.
Of this new signature attraction at Disney Hollywood Studios, right?
Oh, did I ever? And I have so much to share. This thing. We'll keep that for the second half of the show, everybody. But okay. Yes, I certainly did.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's do some quick news items up front and then get to the meat of the thing. So, all right. Since Dan and I last recorded, first of all, we had John Boyega, I believe he was on Good Morning America when he admitted this, that basically he was moving apartments and somehow managed to not only leave his copy of the script for Rise of the Resistance in the apartment, I guess it was under the bed, which is why he didn't see it and bring it with him. But evidently, a cleaner who came into the apartment to get it ready for the next tenant took the bed apart, found the script, and then decided to put it up on eBay, which, you know, again, I guess starting bid of $84, Dan. And, you know, thankfully, I guess it was some sharp-eyed Disney employee who was like, wait a minute, and reached out to the seller and reached out to eBay and got it pulled down. And you've got not so small boys in your house. You've got teenagers, young adults who occasionally do fluky, you know, forgetful things. What's your thoughts about this? Especially since we're not talking about a 17-year-old here, we're talking about a 27-year-old.
He's one of the people we're depending on to keep the resistance afloat.
Yeah.
I thought, oh gosh, I kind of wish this didn't come out.
Yeah,
I mean, I had John Boyega on the show once. I was part of a conference call to talk with him, and I thought he was nothing but charming and generous with his time and professional. So I was a little surprised by this. I guess things happen, but he's very fortunate that it didn't happen a lot worse. And that it's a pretty scary guffaw.
Oh yeah, well, and not to you know, be too dramatic about it, but face it, I want to say this happened with Game of Thrones, and in that situation, the pages actually get out there. You know, things that people had been looking forward to for months got spoiled because, you know, those pages get out there. So in a lot of ways, I guess we're lucky that it didn't get out. And the reason I bring up this story is just yesterday, 23 tracks from the Star Wars Rise of the Resistance soundtrack became available for streaming over at the Walt Disney Studios Awards website. Now, are you familiar with this at all?
I am. I saw that it came out, and let's see how well you know me. What do you think I did?
Well, that's, you know, I as soon as I heard the story, well, of course Dan isn't going to listen. I mean, Dan's the guy, he's been avoiding the trailers, he's been avoiding the king of self-control, you know, this is not going to show up on his radar.
I'm so disciplined, I blindfolded myself on Rise of the Resistance. Just kidding, I didn't do that. No, but I'm not going to listen until I see it in the theater.
Well, but the interesting thing is that, again, for those of you who aren't familiar with, we're right in the middle of award season right now, folks. You know, we had the Golden Globes nominations out early this week, and I think Nancy was telling me on the drive home today that she saw the nominations for SAG Awards had also gone up. So what Disney has done at its award site is, you know, they're trying to get John Williams' work for a Rise of the Resistance considered for an Academy Award. Because face it, you know, 5 out of the 8 Star Wars films that he's done music for have been nominated. In fact, The New Hope actually took home the Best Score Award back in 77. And Disney tried, actually, you know, they did what they thought was a relatively smart move. They kept the titles off of these tracks. They just listed them 1 through 23. And, you know, you had to actually listen to them to determine whether or not, again, you deemed the score worthy. But the interesting thing
is, he's such a story. I hate to interrupt, but John Williams is such a dramatic and powerful storyteller. Yep. That my guess is if you listen to this based on a certain musical cues, you'll probably be able to predict a lot of the film.
Well, and that's the interesting point that came up, you know, and again, because this 4-year consideration page for John Williams became pretty public knowledge very quickly. People began listening. Disney pulled down the links, and this might stymie their efforts to score, you know, an Oscar for John Williams. But on the other hand, the story secrets for the Rise of Skywalker will remain vaulted for at least another 8 days, you know, because what is it? Don't they actually start showing this? I know it's supposed to arrive in theaters on the 20th, but on the night of the 19th.
19th. Yeah,
the 19th. You doing a special screening?
Yeah, we're doing one in Peoria, Illinois, at the Peoria Riverfront Museum. We're doing a live podcast. Mm-hmm. They got us going through the entire museum, the audio, and we'll be on stage right before the actual thing. But 6 o'clock, I think, is where it starts pretty much universally on the 19th.
That is so cool.
We'll save you a seat, buddy.
Well, all right. I will prepare a box with air holes now. It's in the hands of UPS. Okay. And the other story, I think that was significant, while you and I were away, Dan, was the story coming out of the UK on September 29th. And I'm talking in specific about the patient who is at Rowan's Hospice in Hampshire, England. And the staff there, on behalf of this patient's family, reached out to the Walt Disney Company and basically said that, look, time is not on this guy's side. He's a huge Star Wars fan. And, you know, is there anything you could do? Because he would really like to see The Rise of Skywalker. And the interesting thing is that Bob Iger actually got involved in this. And what they arranged to do was they sent a Disney employee to the hospice with a laptop. I mean, the whole notion is that, you know, he went to the building with the movie on, you know, a computer, or, you know, as close to the finished film. I think that they were still buttoning it up at that point. And they played it for this patient and his family in his room at the hospice. And the folks, again, at the facility in Hampshire, England, just couldn't say enough nice things about, you know, the fact that the patient himself, you know, thanked Disney. He said, I want to say the biggest thank you to everyone that helped make this happen during what was a horrible situation to be in. You have helped make some wonderful memories and bring some joy to my family. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. What I'm going through is completely dire. And then to top that, I wasn't going to be able to see the film I've been waiting to see since 1977. I still can't believe it. You know, the only way I can describe this to say is that this is what it must feel like to be told you have won £1 million. And, you know, the wife had a similarly positive message to put out that we are truly humbled by everyone's efforts. What has happened over the past few days has been truly mind-blowing. From a simple conversation to witnessing the outpouring of generosity has been amazing. The massive Star Wars community has been incredible. The amazing people who visited, along with the message and the gifts we received, provided us with an opportunity to talk with our son more about the reality of his dad's condition. So, you know, again, this is what I love about this is this is the, you know, not only the Walt Disney Company, but the Star Wars community coming together to make an awful moment for a family that much better. And the other reason I wanted to bring up the story tonight, Dan, is that a very similar thing happened here in New Hampshire about 2 years ago. It didn't quite get the same amount of press or attention that what just happened in Hampshire, England did. But I still want to share this story. Anyway, we have to jump back to December of 2017. There's a gentleman called Ron Velmer. He's a lifelong Star Wars fan, recently retired from 40 years in the Air Force, and he finds himself dealing with stage 4 colon cancer. And, you know, so, but the thing is that, you know, it's like, okay, it's colon cancer. It moves relatively slowly. And so this is a guy who's read all the Star Wars books and seen all of the movies, and his dying wish was to see The Last Jedi. And initially, the Villemere family thought, well, Dad's going to be well enough to see this movie. And so they actually went out and bought tickets in advance to the opening weekend, a screening of Episode 8 that was gonna, that they were planning on taking him to at the O'Neill Cinema in Epping, New Hampshire. But then Ron's condition suddenly took a turn for the worse. And, you know, the whole notion of him sitting upright in a theater seat for 2 hours, for, you know, 2 hours plus, was no longer an option. And so, you know, Ron's daughter Elizabeth tweets out a Vilmer story and uses the hashtag Ron's Last Jedi. And it's just basically asked, can somebody help us here? You know, my dad wants to see this movie. And, you know, and the interesting thing is that it's not Disney Studios that handles this. It's the local community. You know, and it's the folks who work, well, the hospice that he, facility was staying was in Bedford, New Hampshire. And one town over from that is the small town that I live in, New Boston, New Hampshire. And these two, the fire departments of these two, towns sort of put their heads together, and it's like, okay, so he can't sit in a theater seat for 2 hours to watch this movie, but could Ron maybe lie in a gurney in the theater? And so they go to the hospice and they talk with folks there, and it's like, well, yeah, I think, yeah, if you were on a gurney, we could do this. And so, you know, the fire departments of Bedford, New Hampshire and New Boston pool their resources, and not only to transport Ron to the cinema for, you know, a screening of The Last Jedi, but also to have staff there in the theater to watch over him just in case something were to go south. Honestly, the best part of this story, at least as far as I'm concerned, is Ron had no idea this was in the works. His daughter hadn't told him. The only way he found out this was going to happen was suddenly, you know, early one Saturday morning, a Star Wars fan dressed in full Darth Vader regalia appears in his room at hospice and says, Ron Velmer, you have been summoned by the Emperor. And with that, an honor guard or first order stormtroopers, they lead the way. He's wheeled in a gurney out of his hospice facility in Bedford, New Hampshire, to a waiting ambulance. And he's then transported to the O'Neill Cinema in Epping, New Hampshire, where he, as he's rolled into the theater, he's greeted by this, I want to say it's 15 to 20 cosplayers in Star Wars outfits. We're talking Chewbacca, we're talking Jawas, we're talking our dark adult take on Mark Hamill. And they, along with Ron, his friends and his family, are treated to their own private showing of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. And I bring up the story tonight, Dan, because face it, I don't know if you saw the story that ran in the New York Times earlier today, where, you know, it's one of these things where, again, no disrespect to John Boyega, but they've got him quoted in the piece where he's talking about how he thought the storyline for Last Jedi was a little iffy, and he supposedly talked with about the script's merits with Mark Hamill. And as a direct result, anybody who's been watching online is that, you know, the more toxic aspects of the Star Wars fan community have once again risen up, and they're all, you know, doing the whole Rian Johnson ruined my childhood thing again. And look, as Dan will tell you, this is an aspect of the Disney fan community. They're vocal, but it's small. I mean, it's a relatively small but loud group.
That's right.
The larger portion of this fan community, they're like the folks back here in New Hampshire who got up ridiculously early on an incredibly cold Saturday morning to help a daughter make her dying dad's wish come true. And these folks did this very kind thing, not because they were looking for likes or clicks, but because it was the kind, decent thing to do. And Ron, of course, was thrilled to get his very own private screening of The Last Jedi. He didn't complain about the casino scenes or debate whether Rose Tico added anything of value to the franchise. What Ron talked about was how much he enjoyed the experience. More importantly, how much he appreciated the effort of all the people who had helped to make his private screening of The Last Jedi happen. This is a quote from an interview he did with our local ABC affiliate, WMUR. I hope God will bless each and every single one of them, just like I feel blessed right now. And it's just unbelievable that all these people are here. People dressed like Luke, Rey, Chewbacca, Jowers. Thank God for Star Wars fans. So
that's great.
Yep. Again, not to take anything away from what Disney as a company just did for this guy in hospice in Hampshire, New England.
No, it reinforces it. What you said is exactly spot on. This is what the Star Wars community is at its best. Mm-hmm. And we are people that are compassionate. We are empathetic. And we believe in building each other up, which very much is in line with the coda that Star Wars at its core is about anyway. This mm-hmm. is the kind of stuff we should be perpetuating and retweeting and not giving any oxygen or social media real estate to things that don't go alongside that.
I agree. I totally agree. Anyway, just to finish up here, Ron passed away on January 22nd, 2018. And I just wanted to thank again my friends and neighbors here in New Boston, as well as Bedford, New Hampshire, who helped make a dying man's last wish happen. And okay, all right, enough with that stuff. Let us move on to a much happier tale, which I'm hoping is Dan's experience at the opening weekend of Star Wars Rise of the Resistance at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
And we're back. Okay, so again, you got to indulge me, Dan. I love background. So yes. you got invited to the Rise of the Resistance press event, right? You know,
yes.
And like months ago, right?
Yeah, I did. I've known about it for a while. And I also knew that the odds were high that because of my day job, I wouldn't be able to do it, because as an educator, there's only a certain amount of time that you can take off work because you've got to be with your students. So I wasn't able to make that happen. However, I did send my good friend and the original co-creator of Coffee with Kenobi, Corey Club, to mm-hmm. cover it for me, and he did a great job. However, thanks to MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, I still made it down there for opening weekend. And spoiler alert, everybody, it is amazing. Rise of the Resistance is amazing. Stand on the rooftops and shout it out.
Okay. Well, that before we get to the actual ride, now, again, you know, when did Becky reach out? Because, again, you know, I mean, I always love about you, Dan, is, again, your students are the priority and, you know, that, you know, it, and, but again, for somebody who has your gig, Coffee with Kenobi, you know, it had to have been tough to, you know, I got the invite, I can't go.
It's kind of part and parcel. Yeah. The nature of the blessings is, you know, equal light and equal dark. That's balance, right? Mm-hmm.
There you go. So when did Becky reach out and say, hey, why don't we look into getting you down there at least for the weekend rather than, you know, say the actual event? Sure.
Well, she and I have been kind of marinating on that for a couple of weeks. With the idea that was probably what was going to happen. And she always delivers, and it worked out beautifully.
Okay. So did you finish your day at school on Friday and then?
Yeah, here's what I did. You'll love it. I always think of you saying a ninja in and out, because that's basically I'm getting my black belt over the past couple of months for sure. But school got out at 2:54. My last class of the day, I was observed by an administrator because you have to be every couple of years. And then I shook his hand, thanked him. The students were great. Ran to my car, got to the airport. I had the airport's about 25 minutes away, and I had to be there in about an hour before it took off. And I made it with plenty of time to spare. Went through a TSA pre-check, bada bing, and got to Orlando. I stopped in Atlanta, transferred there, and got into my actual hotel at Disney's Coronado about 12:30 in the morning.
Dear Lord. Okay. Now, you had to, just like me, have been watching what's been going on this past, you know, past few days with the rise of the resistance, with people arriving at the park at, you know, in the pre-dawn in order to guarantee, you know, that they get a booking group and then get in this thing. So when did you, again, you get your hotel at 12:30? You know, did we actually put our head in a pillow, or we just start bolting black coffee to be ready to get out the door at 3? What did you do?
And there's two things you can be sure of when it comes to me and travel. One, when it is time to sleep, I will sleep in less than 30 seconds. I never have a hard time falling asleep. And then when it's time to get up, I am going to be ready to go. I mean, Coffee with Kenobi, of course, is the name of the show, but I had so much adrenaline and excitement to experience this thing. That nothing was going to stop me. So I got up, went down, had some breakfast in the Coronado in their massive food court area. And then I got over to studios about 8:15 in the morning.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
And when I was there, so I think go ahead. No.
I mean, I have to admit, I'm kind of intrigued because so many people have been getting their very, you know, ridiculously early and, you know, making their way through the queue and, you know, and getting their boarding group and, you know, then beginning the, you know, the march to the back of the park. And so, all right. So this is counterintuitive. You're there at 8:15.
Yes. Well, so let's put a very, very significant caveat out there in the first place. Okay. I am very fortunate. I am very blessed. And I worked very hard to get where I am in the Star Wars community. And because of that, that hard work and perseverance and the incredible blessings I have, Disney took care of me. They walked me right. They were waiting for me. They took me right to the attraction and they let me ride it as many times as I wanted. In fact, at the end of my ride, each time they were waiting for me with big smiles on their faces and said, "Would you like to go again?" And the answer to that is always yes.
Okay.
So I'm very fortunate. But trust me, ladies and gentlemen, I don't take it for granted. I appreciate it. And I can give you plenty of tips so that you can make sure that you get to ride on Rise of the Resistance too. Because I know there's a lot of conflicting information out there, but I can certainly tell you how to make it happen.
There is, you know, but let's be honest here. You know, Rise of the Resistance has had some operational issues, you know, which anyone who's been following what's been going on over at Islands Adventure, you know, Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, when you do an elaborate, ambitious attraction, you know, those first few weeks and months can be challenging. And you know, I don't need to tell you because you've experienced this thing multiple times. This is perhaps the most ambitious attraction that's ever, you know, the Imagineers have ever attempted for a Disney theme park. And, you know, lots of pieces have to work.
I can't wait to pick your brain about it because of your in-depth theme park knowledge and experiences. When you go on this, ladies and gentlemen, there is no way you can ride this and not think to yourself, oh my goodness, what a technological and engineering marvel this thing is. There are so many working pieces in sync at specific times and in places. It is so smooth and effortless. It is no wonder that it is so challenging to run at a consistent rate. And as far as it breaking down, do you want me to talk about that? Because I have plenty to say about that. It's, don't believe the hype. I mean, yes, it does break down, but Disney knows what they're doing. Do you want me to talk about that now or you want to wait?
Sure.
Okay, so the first time I went on it, I got into the waiting area right before the first main queue with Ray. And we were in there for, I don't know, 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden, there was just kind of this weird vibe in the room. And they opened these doors and the cast members looked like, okay, here we go. And we all walked out. And they gave everybody little paper fast passes and basically said, when it's working again, come back and we'll get you on it, which was great. And, you know, what else can you do, really? So throughout the day, then that happened. Let me think about this. It happened to me one other time. I actually got all the way to where we sat in the ride vehicle itself. And then an announcement came over a loudspeaker that everybody had to evacuate their vehicles. But the cast members laughed and said, no, stay right here. We haven't escaped the first order yet. And then they interacted with us for a good 15, 20 minutes, asking us what we thought about Kylo Ren, asking us what our plan was to when we got into the Resistance, how we were going to help fight the First Order. People were laughing, having the best time. It was so entertaining and so seamless that when I looked at my watch and I saw that it had been 15 or 20 minutes, I could not believe it. And then all of a sudden it came on again and another guest said, so do we have to get off? And the cast member said, no, we're not getting off. We've got to escape. And all of a sudden the door opened, boom, and we went through the ride. The thing that surprised me about that is I thought they would make us evacuate. They didn't. We legitimately sat in that vehicle for 20 minutes and then rode it once it was all working smoothly. So I don't know if Len has experienced that or heard of anything like that as well, but I was impressed with that. And I talked with multiple cast members throughout the day. Both while the ride was down and when the ride was working. And they had told me, you know, about three times a day and this was after being open for a couple of days, they knew it was going to go down, but they also knew that they would work at it pretty smoothly and quickly and efficiently to get it back up and running again. Basically, the best thing to do is to get there early, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But they also said, and you've probably heard about this as well, that one of the big things that keeps causing it to break down has to do with cell phones and cell phone usage. And someone off the record suggested to me, you know, if everybody would put their phones on airplane mode, this ride would not go down at all. Had you heard anything like that yet? Which of course you can have people do. It's just not going to happen.
You know, it just, but you know, part of the problem here is think about how many people online have already posted selfies with the 50 animatronic stormtroopers behind them. I mean, you know, and Disney designed this ride for that moment. You know, it's a hard thing to try to address after the fact. They are looking into it, but you know, the whole notion of half the reason, people, especially right now, want to share the fact that I have been on this amazing ride and, you know, I went this ride path versus that ride path, or, you know, did you catch this detail and that sort of thing. So in a weird sort of way, you know, I mean, face it, you know, for example, Madonna is touring right now and actually makes her audience surrender, their cell phones. Everybody has to leave their cell phone outside the theater in a bag that they can then collect, you know, later during the show. And
it's like when you go to a screening.
And, but it just, you know, the whole notion of, do we really want to do that? Do we really, is there another workaround? Is there another way?
Yeah, I'm sure there's got to be.
Well, you know, and again, remember, at the point we're talking right now, Dan, this thing hasn't been open a week. Right. You know, and, you know, we've already seen, you know, for example, Disney, you know, shut down, you know, the people's abilities to ride this thing multiple times a day, or book, you know, be in two boarding groups, because they're trying to accommodate as many guests as possible. And, you know, each day they're getting better and better at it, but it's definitely a work in progress.
It is, but it's nowhere near the disaster that, that Hagrid's bike is. And I feel like when I was there, cause I definitely was feeling the pulse. I mean, I walked into guest services to hear what people were talking about, cause I wanted to have more of a bird's eye view of it. Mm-hmm. And people were frustrated. People, you know, from overseas that came over were frustrated. They weren't going to be able to experience the attraction. And Disney is working around the clock, trying to make it happen for people as best as they can. Of course, while they make magic, they can't do that kind of magic. Mm-hmm. I think you have to sort of expect something this ambitious, especially as quickly as they put it together, mm-hmm. that there's going to be some snafus. So it might be prudent to wait a month or two until some of that's ironed out. Mm-hmm. But if you do go, I think the key for you is to get there as early as possible. Get in there, get in that virtual queue. You know, you have to be inside the park. You have to make sure you've got your magic band and your theme park ticket. Mm-hmm. And then you have to hope the force is with you and sign up. But if you feel like sleeping in or getting there right when the park opens, it's not going to happen for you. It's just not going to.
Got it. Okay. Forgive me, we're going to back up the truck a little bit, because I want to walk with you through this thing. So you did the outside queue and the pre-show, you know, the sort of tunneling into the ruin, that sort of thing. As being the you know, the Jedi class Star Wars fan that you are, what surprised you? What leaped out at you?
So this is actually, you hear all kinds of stories about people getting choked up throughout this experience. This is where I got choked up, in the queue. I'm walking through this thing, and I felt like I was in The Force Awakens on the Resistance base. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking of Carrie Fisher and her on Dakar in the Resistance base. And I thought, I am here. You're walking through these lockers of the X-Wing pilots' helmets and their and their outfits, and you're looking at this incredibly detailed architecture that looks like it was naturally laser engraved into the stonework. And you are absolutely speechless. And this is the moment, Jim, where I realized the immersion, this is true immersion. Because it wasn't like I was in a theme park. It wasn't like I was in Walt Disney World. It wasn't like I was on a Star Wars ride. I was in the movie. I can say that without any hint of hyperbole. I felt like I was in the movie, and that was just in the first queue. And that feeling did not go away. It just continued to enhance and kind of marinate throughout my Star Wars soul.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you know, and so many people have discussed the, you know, the Rey hologram, the BB-8 AA, and again, that wonderful moment where you're suddenly out on the airstrip, you know, making the run for the transport. But the thing that people talk over and over again about the Rise of the Resistance experience, it seems for a lot of people, it's their favorite illusion on the attraction, is the notion that the very same door that you went through, you know, when it comes time to, you know, when it opens next, you're on a Star Destroyer, you know, and this is all done, you know, a seamless bit of stagecraft.
The I heard you in Len's show talking about this, because of course he got to experience this as well, and he's 100% right. When I was on the original ride vehicle, the Resistance shuttle, transport shuttle, I thought I was on the ride, like the ride. I mean, of course my head was all over the place, cause I was just soaking it in, picking my tongue off the floor, cause I just kept gaping at everything. And then when through Subterfuge, you walk through the same door, which still staggers me. And when you're in that Star Destroyer hangar, I was actually watching The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens this week with my mythology students. And I kept thinking I was in there without any hint of irony, because the way that it makes you feel is right. And Len is right. It's certainly as tall and massive as you've felt it to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, the scope is insane. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like I'm in an aircraft carrier, but it does feel like I'm in a massive, mm-hmm. massive Star Destroyer. And the star field that they have mm-hmm. that is right there, it is so seamless that I legitimately don't feel like I'm looking at a screen. Now, when I'm in the Smuggler's Run, I feel like when I'm in the cockpit of the Falcon, I can tell I'm looking at a screen. But here, mm-hmm. you don't have that feeling at all.
Okay. So, but again, you know, that, and I think it's Len who, you know, talked about, you know, the sort of using the example of the four different, stretching rooms in the Haunted Mansion, how, you know, they, you know, cleverly move people about and break them down into smaller groups and that sort of thing. But once you're actually on the shuttle and being driven by that droid through, and again, the thing that just sort of leaped out at me is that you mentioned that you're in the movie, and it's the notion of the commitment to, I mean, face it, I don't need to explain to you how the Star Wars movies are done with, you know, green screen and set extensions and CGI, you know, so to be in a space where you can't do any of that, you have to, in order to do this, you have to commit to, you know, a ridiculous level of detail and you know, a certain scale that Disney hasn't done before. And so what were your favorite aspects of that part of the ride?
Just the architecture, you know, you can't help but put your hands on the walls. Mm-hmm. And the buttons and the lights and just the atmosphere, you just don't even bat an eye. You just think, well, yeah, I watched this movie a million times, so now I'm in it. Mm-hmm. The thing that's staggering, though, mm-hmm. and impressive to me, was the cast members, as particularly mm-hmm. the First Order cast members. Now, I will say the Resistance ones, whenever there was a moment where they would rescue you or they would come in, they were so animated and jumping and emotional that you felt like, I better run. I better hurry up. Here's the Resistance. Let's go. Let's go. You start yelling at people. Come on. No, leave them behind. You know, mm-hmm. it was great. But the First Order officers that were there, I mean, they even walk with their hands behind their back as they're pacing back and forth. And they have these wonderful British accents. There was one little girl in particular who had reindeer antlers on, like a headband. Mm-hmm. And he said, I see you have secured long range communications. She just looked at him like scared. Mm-hmm. And the mom held her laugh. And then the officer walked away. And I watched mm-hmm. his face. He didn't crack a smile. And the guests laughed so hard. Mm-hmm. That's a huge takeaway for me. Besides the Haunted Mansion, this is about the only place I can remember where it's permissible to be cranky and mm-hmm. rude and short with people. And it adds so much to the experience, so much so that I forgot these are cast members just doing a day's wage. They were living in that Star Wars movie too, having a wonderful time.
Well, the interesting thing is that at least for me, is that, you know, as of late, we've heard about so many people who, you know, when they heard that these jobs were available, desperately pursued them. And, you know, and in a weird sort of way, they're living their dream by getting to be, you know, a member of the First Order and to be kind of short with guests and that sort of thing. But you know, they're really enjoying that this is their, you know, playset as well. That, you know, we get to ride the ride, but this is where they get to work and, you know, get to do this really kind of cutting edge for, you know, the thing in a Disney theme park. Oh, now, again, having ridden this thing multiple times during your visit the past weekend, do you have a favorite ride path or...
You know what? I rode it four times. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I rode it three times, and I mm-hmm. got the same path every time.
Did you really?
Yes, I kept hoping. Okay. It's sort of weird because I'm certainly not shy about being an advocate for myself or trying mm-hmm. to help make things speed along. Mm-hmm. But the way it was done and laid out for you, I just felt kind of like, I better just do what this person says. Mm-hmm. So I just kept walking on the same path. I was always on the right-hand side, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. I wasn't on the... Which is the one that's dramatically different, the blue one?
I want to say yes.
I never went on the blue one. That's the one I did not do. But the one I did do, the one I did do multiple times, the animatronic for one of the main characters from the sequel trilogy, mm-hmm. Who we may have spoken about earlier on the show, is so lifelike. I had to do a triple take to make sure it wasn't actually John Boyega sitting there. I mean, it's
the footage of that is just startling.
It really is.
You know. All right. I close this out. I have to ask. Obviously, you're back in Black Spire Outpost. You know, and experiencing this brand new attraction. Did we perhaps, you know, slide back over to Smuggler's Run to sort of compare and contrast, or?
Well, you know, of course I did. Well, they had said to me, where else would you like to go? I said, well, let's go fly the Falcon. So they took me on the Falcon. And then later that night, it was only a 10-minute standby line because the park was about to close. So I rode it. I rode it twice. Now I can say I've sat in all six places in the cockpit. So that's cool.
Okay, and having done that, are we still a fan of being the pilot? Because face it, yeah, there is nothing quite like doing the jump to light speed, but what about the other positions?
Well, this was the first time I was the pilot on the left-hand side. I'd never done that before.
Oh, okay.
And I found it to be similarly stressful to being the pilot that goes up and down, but I also had a better grasp of when you're actually controlling it and when you aren't, which helps to kind of alleviate some of the challenges. The first row, as you know, is definitely the most stressful and challenging. In fact, there was a mom, the second time I went on, I was the gunner on the left side, and there was a mom when it was done that said, never again. Because her kids kept yelling at her, go here, go there, you know, and that's always challenging.
This is exactly what I said about Nancy and my ride experience. It was just, you know, it's one of these things where, especially when you want everyone with you to have a good time.
Yes.
And, you know, and suddenly you're the one driving the bus, or more to the point, you're the one driving into the spires. You know, just it's a little tough if you're in that parental mindset. So,
well, I couldn't help but think the entire time, how would people look at Smuggler's Run if it opened the same time as Rise of the Resistance? What would the outpouring be? I don't know that it would be all that different. Because it doesn't compare to Smugglers to the Rise of Resistance. And the reason is because nothing on this planet compares to Rise of the Resistance. You know, and we haven't even talked about some of the ride aspects of which we'll close out with, but it's hard to live up to that. In fact, I don't think it's a fair comparison. It's like comparing, how do I say this without cheapening? It would be like comparing the best sushi you've ever had to a really, really, really good cheeseburger. It's just not this. They're both great in their own way. They've both got their own audience. And honestly, some of the biggest appeal for the Falcon anyway is that queue where we get to sit at the jarring table and going through the line itself and seeing the back of the Falcon, which that's the only way you can do it. No, that still is hard to beat.
All right. Well, again, our time grows short here, so we're entering the lightning round here.
Yes.
Did we have a particular favorite room? I think half the fun of this attraction is you really go places you didn't expect to go. And then suddenly to find yourself, for example, on the gunnery level, and to be sort of tap dancing between these massive weapons.
That's probably the most impressive thing. Mm-hmm. That aspect is the timing of that. It was fun seeing the probe droid. That was an unexpected surprise. I was pretty good about remaining fairly spoiler free. I will say that I wish I hadn't seen a single still or video shot before I went in, because I think even though the first two times I went on it, even after the first time when I knew it was going to happen, my mouth was still wide open. I kept saying, wow, because there's so many wow, jaw dropping moments. Of course, the AT-AT room takes your breath away. It's spectacular. It's hard to kind of pick a favorite spot. I think it's pretty cool when it's over and you're escaping and you're going through where you've landed on Pakara, because that's the new planet that where Leia is stationed. That's a pretty breathtaking moment, but it's hard not to kind of be taken aback by the hangar bay. I mean, that's really neat. When you first get onto the transport earlier on in the attraction, you get to see Poe Dameron's black and orange X-wing life-size. That's the only way that you can see it. That is certainly a stunner, and BB-8 is perched in the cockpit. It's hard to say. It's kind of like saying which kid is your favorite. They're all pretty special for very different reasons.
Got it. And again, face it, you can fly down there, you're there on Saturday, you're home on Sunday. Did we procure a Rise of the Resistance merchandise while we were in Orlando?
Of course. I kind of went a little wild.
Okay.
Yeah, I bought the Rise of the Resistance limited edition magic band. They only made 3,000 of them. Mm-hmm. So I bought a blue one of those.
Okay.
I went into Oga's for a while. Mm-hmm. I had the white Wampa ale. I'd never had that before, so that was good. I don't know that that's a souvenir though. Mm-hmm. But then I went into Doc Ondar's, because mm-hmm. every time I go, I buy a Kyber crystal. So I bought a yellow one just because mm-hmm. that reminded me of the original Luke Skywalker Kenner action figure. His lightsaber is yellow for the Kenner mm-hmm. figure. So I bought one of those. And then for some foolish reason, I thought, well, I'm going to go look at the legacy lightsabers. What's the harm in looking? So I went over there, and some kind soul was holding Kylo Ren's lightsaber. And I thought,
mm-hmm.
and I actually said to the cast member, you know, I really should not do this because it's going to be a mistake, but can I hold that? And he said, sure, and he handed it to me. I bought it. Yeah.
Well, you know, on behalf of Mrs. Danzig, you saved her the trouble of buying your Christmas present, right? You know,
that's exactly right. That's exactly
right. There we
right.
go. Okay.
I do it for altruistic reasons.
Totally. Yeah. I completely understand.
I knew you would. Uncle Jim always comes through.
Well, yeah. This is the same argument I use with Nancy when it's like going to buy a ridiculously expensive book. I'm saving you the trouble of buying this for me.
That's right.
Okay.
But the Magic Band is the only Rise of Resistance thing I bought. They had T-shirts and coffee mm-hmm. mugs and some hats and mm-hmm. some exclusive buttons. And I liked all those. But I've gotten pretty good about only buying something I know I can instantly display in my coffee with Kenobi Studio. And that's exactly mm-hmm. what I did.
Good. Got to admire the discipline there. And speaking of coffee with Kenobi, that Dan has to motor, because as soon as we wrap up here, he's off to record a brand new episode of that, which, again, by the way, folks, if you have not checked out that show already, this is one of a slew of you know, Kenobi-related shows that you do for the world. Okay. Correct, Dan, right?
Right. Yeah. Coffee with Kenobi. You can listen to us each and every week anywhere you can find podcasts. Mm-hmm. This week we have a couple of shows reviewing The Mandalorian. I'm going to mm-hmm. talk much more in depth about my experiences on Rise of the Resistance. We've got audio from the Rise of Skywalker press conference that I sent someone to in California. I've got a round table with Michelle Rejwan? Right? Mm-hmm. That's Rejwan and Chris Terrio, the co-writer of The Rise of Skywalker. And then we're going to have exclusive coverage from the premiere of The Rise of Skywalker in Hollywood, California, and our immediate reactions to seeing the movie. So it is going to be a very, very busy week and a half. And if you're on our CWK Patreon page, you're going to get exclusive video and pictures from the red carpet event as well.
Holy cow. Wow. Okay. Lots of cannot miss stuff there, folks. Over here, we do okay. Well, we've got Disney Dish with Len Testo. We've got Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse. Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor.
personal
friend.
Just mute when Drew talks and you'll be a lot happier.
Oh, God. We have Marvel Us Disney that I do with Aaron Adams, the gentleman who does a lot of editing here. At the Jim Hill Media, and of course I Want That with Michelle Valladolid, and we're getting our Christmas at this point it may be our post-Christmas gift guide, as in what you do with all those gift cards, folks, but you know, that'll be up shortly. But tell you what, if you could do Dan and I a favor and head over to iTunes and rate and recommend not only this show but, you know, the various Coffee with Kenobi podcasts, that would be incredibly helpful. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what we do here, if you get over to Bandcamp and subscribe, well, that helps me afford these overpriced books and Dan his lightsabers.
And lightsabers.
Anyway, well, again, Dan's got a scamper, but when you get back from Hollywood, we definitely have to talk. And if, in fact, you mentioned The Mandalorian, which we really, really, really have to talk about, because I have to admit, I am just fascinated by this 1-2 punch of, you know, Rise of the Resistance, you know, wrapping up the Star Wars saga and what Mandalorian is doing to fandom. I, you know, it just, it's a very, very smart play. But again, we'll talk about that further on the next Looking at Lucasfilm.